You're listening to the Climb Your Mountain Podcast, Episode 71, Overcoming Fears. Welcome to the Climb Your Mountain Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Maurer, a certified personal trainer, high altitude mountaineer, and ultra runner. Each week, I show you how to train, eat, think, and live like a mountaineer so you can boost your chances of reaching the summit. My passion is to empower people of all ages and sizes to get outside and live lives of adventure. Remember, mountain climbing will never be easier than today. So let's dive into the show. Hey friend, how you doing? I am good. I just came off of a really good weekend. I took one of my friends to climb her first 14er. And I think this was kind of questionable judgment on my part. I took her to climb Mount Princeton because it's one that I still needed. But looking back, maybe it's not the best 14er for a first timer. And I didn't realize, you look at it and it says that it's class 2. And I figured, you know, it probably has some rocks, but there's more or less a trail all the way to the top. And no, pretty much for like 5 or 6 hours, you're just walking on talus, which is, you know, medium sized rocks, and you're hopping from rock to rock and they're moving. And then there's some parts where it's really steep and you're just taking one step up and falling 2 steps backwards. And I really thought my friend would hate this. And I mean, I probably would have hated it if it was my first 14er, but bless her heart, she's such a good sport. She found a way to have a good time. She was super excited. She says she's super stoked to do more of them. I believe her. I think she's going to do Grays and Tories next, which I think will be a little bit more pleasant for her. And she can really get the 14er experience. But yeah, she was such a trooper, being on these rocks for hours and hours and hours with me. And I'm a person that kind of likes rocks. And I was completely over the rocks by the end. I'm like, just screw these rocks. I don't want to see any more rocks. But it's done. Princeton is done. And yeah, now all my 14ers are getting further away. Like, I think I still have Antero, and then the rest are in Durango. As you start climbing them and checking them off, they start getting further from Denver, which is just the way it is, I guess. No way around it. So let's dive into our topic for today. Let's talk about overcoming fears. I think this is something that I get a lot of questions about, other than how to train for mountaineering when you're in the flatlands. Overcoming different kinds of fears is probably one of the most common questions that comes up in our Facebook group, or people hit me with on Instagram. And so let's talk a little bit about why it's so important to work on our fears, work on our minds. And I'm also going to give you a really simple tool that you can use that I use almost every trip, and also give to many of my clients, and they also find it really useful. So just a great way to overcome fears. So why overcome fears in mountaineering? And the simple answer is, pretty much everything you want is on the other side of the fear. And the answer is because pretty much everything you want in life is on the other side of fear. And this could be a mountaineering goal, like rock climbing the Grand Teton or scrambling a class 3 bridge. But because mountaineering is such a laboratory for life, it could also be something like a promotion or finding your soulmate or becoming a parent. And as we talked about in the last episode, discomfort really is the price of admissions to your dreams, and fear is part of that. So learning how to manage fear is an extremely useful skill in mountaineering and also in life. So what are people afraid of in the mountains? I thought it might be fun just to talk about some of the most common things that people raise in the Facebook group or in my classes. So I'd say the number one, which probably won't surprise you, is exposure. So exposure simply means fear of heights. And you might encounter exposure while rock climbing. Obviously, you could fall straight down in that case. But also when you're snow climbing, when you're scrambling, even sometimes when you're hiking, you have to walk on a trail where maybe one side is a big drop off. Or even when you're driving to the trailhead, that could be the case. There's a big drop off beside the road. So exposure can come up in so many ways. And I think a lot of people have fear of what I like to call deadly hazards, things like storms and avalanches. While we can mitigate and manage the danger around some of these things by making good choices, I mean, there always are dangers in the mountains. Our sports are inherently risky. And I think we sometimes feel that when we're up there. One thing I think it kind of takes people by surprise, but is very common, is fear of descending, walking down a steep slope. So I had an experience with this actually when I climbed Mount Rainier. It's a pretty, you know, moderate snow climb the whole way up. It's probably about 40 degrees. I climbed up it, no problem. And then turned around to go down and like completely lost my mind. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't walk down this. And I think my team was like panicking. They're like, how are we going to get down with this girl who is just like walking, like, just every step was so tentative and so scared and so careful. And I mean, after about 10 minutes of doing it, I kind of got in my groove and I was like, oh, this is no big deal. But man, those first 10 minutes were really, really terrifying. And I've heard that from so many people, not just on snow, but even walking down a steep slope with rocks or dirt can be really disorienting and scary for them. I think some of our fears are social. So fear of holding up the group or fear of letting down our teammates if we're too slow, if we can't make it. And kind of on that same token, fear of looking foolish or less skilled than other people. And I think sometimes we have a fear of failure. Like maybe if we don't get to the summit, don't attain the goal, it will mean something about us. It'll prove other people in our lives right. I talked to another friend this weekend. She's a friend from high school that I hadn't seen for a while. And she was climbing Pikes Peak as part of a charity climb. And she had a hard time. She's coming from Texas. She had blisters on her feet. She had been sick a couple of days before and wasn't fully recovered. But, you know, she went to Pikes. It took her 12 hours to climb the bar trail. She climbed the whole thing. And she said to me, and I thought this was so funny, but I think a lot of us can relate. She said that as she was climbing, she was thinking about her mom, and she had told her mom that she was going to climb Pikes, and her mom being like a Midwestern parent, I have them as well. So I feel like I've heard these own words is like, why would you want to do that? Like, you can't do that. Like, you're not athletic. You've never been into like sports and things like that. Like, what makes you think you can climb Pikes Peak? So she thought of her mom and how awesome it would be to kind of prove her mom wrong by getting to the top, which she did. So just a few of the common fears that come up, you can probably add your own to that list. So before I want to talk about how to manage fear, I first want to take a moment just to talk about the positive role that fear plays in our evolution as humans, why it's there, and why it actually means that your brain is working as it should. So if you think about our brain, and if you think about our human ancestors, like they started out a long time ago, thousands of years ago, living in caves. They lived in a very dangerous world. They didn't have a lot of clothing. To get food, they had to go hunt or gather it on their own. They didn't have medicine like we have today. So, you know, they had so many dangers and so many ways to die, basically. So really, at that point in early human evolution, we really developed a survival brain that was very good at spotting danger. And that's one of the ways that we stayed alive. So if you think, for example, of cave person Susie, she's not worried about danger. She's eating all the berries. She's walking in front of the cave where the saber-toothed tiger lives. You know, Susie, she might not last too long out there, right? And survival is also social. So if Susie is abandoned by her tribe, she probably couldn't survive on her own. So it would benefit Susie, you know, to get along, not rock the boat, to cultivate deep connection with other people, because being connected and being part of that tribe is just, it's life, basically. You'll be dead without it. So thanks to natural selection, people who were hypervigilant about physical and social dangers, they're the ones that live long enough to reproduce and spread their genes. And they're, of course, the ancestors of those of us that are living today. So whenever you feel fear, just know that it's your brain working correctly. It's working in a way that promotes survival. And our brain hasn't really caught up to 2021, where life is much safer. There really isn't much that could kill us. We're actually much more in danger of dying from chronic disease than a saber-toothed tiger. But our survival brain is still wired to operate the way it has for thousands and thousands of years. Kind of a corollary to this that I think is so interesting is neurodiversity. So if you think about someone with ADHD, why would natural selection select for something that makes you not able to concentrate, that makes you hypervigilant, that makes it hard to get your work done? And really what no one knows for sure, but one of the theories is that having a hypervigilant person in the family or in the tribe was actually good for the entire group's survival, because maybe everybody's sitting around the fire, they're, you know, listening to the matriarch tell a story. And then there's this one person that's like looking around, like that's not paying attention. That's like, what's happening? And they hear the stick break as the saber-toothed tiger is creeping up. So that's kind of a tangent, I guess. But that's one of the reasons they think that maybe ADHD and some of these other neurodiversity, different kinds of brains have survived into modern time. So how can we take all of this and really put it to work for us in the mountains and in life? So one tool that I use quite a bit and also teach to my clients, and almost everyone universally loves it, finds it easy to use, is called the fear scale. And this kind of works on the concept that fear is like exercise. We need the right dose to get the best results, to grow through our fear. If we have too low of a dose, you know, we're just going to be too comfortable. We're not really going to make progress towards overcoming our fears. And at the same time, if we get too high of a dose, it's going to just completely terrorize us and burn us out and melt us down, kind of like overtraining will do with exercise. So same with fear. So the fear scale is a tool I learned while facilitating at a high ropes course. And I just think that this is so life-changing. So let me teach it to you right now. So fear scale is a 1 to 10 scale. 1 is completely confident and unafraid, no fear at all. 10 is absolute terror. Like your mind is frantic, your heart is pounding out of your chest. You're just facing imminent death at 10. 10 is about as scared as you can get and still be alive. So how do we use this whenever we're out there, let's say, rock climbing for the first time? So you want to kind of put yourself on the scale of 1 to 10, where you think you're at. And basically, the way it breaks down is between 1 and 3, this is the zone of comfort. We're maybe a little bit nervous, but you know, we feel pretty confident that we can do this. It's not really necessarily stretching us or helping us grow. And then from 8 to 10, this is the zone of terror. This is like way too much. It's like traumatizing us. And when we're in this zone, we're in danger of being so scared that we don't want to come back and do the thing ever again. We could get re-triggered and come back to the same place, even if the second experience is not nearly as hard or as scary. And where we want to kind of hang out whenever we're trying to overcome a fear is between a 4 and a 7. So this is the zone of growth. So this is where you're pushing yourself, you're feeling some real discomfort. And for most people, this zone is manageable, even though it's uncomfortable. So this is a really good place to hang out if you want to see growth, if you want to see progress, if you want to start feeling less afraid of the things that are scary. So how can we put this all to work for us? Couple of tips. First, I want you to seek out experiences that will put you in the zone of growth, but not in the zone of terror. So if you're learning to lead climb, maybe you start on a route that you know and feel confident on. Not too easy, because, you know, if it's too easy, then you won't grow. But something right in the middle, between a 4 and a 7 on the fear scale. And if you're trying to become a better rock scrambler, maybe you're starting with something that's a difficult class 2 before you dive into a 3 or a 4. And if you're learning to snow climb, maybe you start with a 30 degree slope instead of the really steep 60 degree couloir where you need 2 ice axes to hold on. So how do you find these trips that are kind of a good fit? It's not an exact science. You can look at guidebooks. You can look at websites online. I think one of the best sources is talking to friends who have overcome similar fears. And you probably know there's some people that will never admit that they were afraid of anything. And maybe they weren't. Like, I think humans all have kind of a different tolerance for diving into these things. But definitely, I have a couple of friends who I've just watched kind of grow and overcome fears. And maybe now they're really comfortable doing things that scare me. So I have them talk to me about like what trips they did that kind of helped them progress, kind of felt like a 4 to 7 for them, a zone of growth for them at different points in their development. Another tip, and I think this is one that's so important to remember, is that growth is nonlinear. It's normal to feel confident doing something and then maybe later on feel nervous about doing it. And this can happen, especially, I think, at the beginning of the climbing season. We usually take the winter off from rock scrambling, for example. And then in the spring, when we go to scramble again, maybe we find we've taken a few steps back in our confidence. And something that should, we think objectively, should be easy for us is making us anxious. So just keeping in mind that that's normal and giving yourself so much permission to ease in. I personally, I love to scramble, but I always plan a couple of easy trips early in the season just to kind of get myself warmed back up and just kind of flex that fear muscle a little, hang out in that zone of growth without like scaring myself. And then finally, I think it's so important to practice general maintenance for your nervous system. So doing some mindfulness practice just to really teach your nervous system to calm down, kind of find that place and anchor in that place that's away from fight or flight, that's fully in rest and digest. And there are so many ways to do this. Breathwork is a wonderful way. Meditation, yoga, whatever it is that just kind of soothes your mind and kind of helps your nervous system just come to a calm place. This is something our bodies are craving like so much, but we get so little of it in our modern lifestyle where everything is just chronically stressful. We wake up and we're like a machine trying to do more and more as if it's a contest. And we just never stop to slow down and process all the things that are happening to us in any given day and just let those things complete and move out of our nervous system. So definitely working on your stress management, working on your mindfulness practice, if that's something that you find helpful. Definitely check out my free download, the Breathwork for Workout Recovery. Even though it's kind of geared towards workout recovery, it's just excellent for overall stress management as well. So friends, that's what I have for you this weekend. Good luck getting out there, going after your fears, overcoming them. I have so much confidence in your ability to grow and change. And just by trying things that are a little bit harder and just pushing that zone of growth, you could be just a whole different person a couple of months from now. I really do believe that. So yeah, shout at me on Instagram, at Miss Adventure Pants is my handle. You can also jump in my Facebook group. It's called Mountaineers and Backpackers in Training. I'll drop links in the show notes. And yeah, otherwise I'll see you here next week. Take care. Hey friend, if you're enjoying the pod, there are two simple and free ways you can show your support. First of all, please share this with a friend who might find it helpful. And second, please leave a review on iTunes. Your support means the world to me. Thanks so much for tuning in.